do in honor of, today is the yard site of the Ramah. Why is Lag BaOmer a day of celebration? We discussed this yesterday at length because of the Ramah. The only reason why today we celebrate Lag BaOmer is because the Ramah is of the opinion that the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva died for only 33 days. Some said he died only 32 days. 32 days. That if you learn that he died for 33 days, the reason why today we are allowed to take haircuts today is Miksas Hayoim Kikuloi. Let's assume that we, for the first 33 days since the Omer, we observe Avelus in memory of their death. So today is the last day of their death. So we don't need to be makbid on the entire day of Avelus, as we know when it comes to Shiva. So we apply the principle of Miksas Hayoim Kikuloi, and that's why today we're allowed to take haircuts. But according to some opinions, the truth is they only died for 32 days. 32 is bigamatria kovoid. Kovoid and 32 is the same gematria. The reason why they died was because shaloi nohagu kovoid zelozeh. And therefore, Min HaShemayim, it came out, they died for 32 days to highlight this point. So therefore, in that opinion, we observe 32 full days of Avelus, and then the night of Lag BaOmer, already you're allowed to, technically you would be permitted to cut your hair and do anything that you possibly want to do because the Avelus is completely over. And in that opinion, there is indeed, we do not follow Miksas Hayoim Kikuloi. Then there is the Shita of the Mechaber. The Mechaber says that they died 34 days. They died for a complete 34 days, and that means that the earliest time you'd be able to take a haircut would be on day 34 if you would apply the principle of Miksas Hayoim Kikuloi. And if you do not apply the principle of Miksas Hayoim Kikuloi, then you would not be able to take a haircut until day 35. So there are really pretty much three basic opinions. Did they die 32 days? Did they die 33 days? Did they die 34 days? And each one of these opinions, it seems if you say 32 days, no one is of the opinion you can take a haircut on day 32. If they hold, they died 32 days, you have to wait until the whole day is over. If you hold that they died 33 or 34 days, then there are different customs if we do say Miksas Hayoim Kikuloi. And the Ramah says we do say Miksas Kikuloi on day 30, we hold 33, and we do say that's why you can take a haircut in the morning. And the Mechaber says 34, and amongst the Svardim who follow the Mechaber, so there are two customs. Some indeed begin to take a haircut on 34 in the morning, and some will wait until the entire 34th day is over, until day 35 at night. Halacha l'maisa, the Olam, the vast majority of the world follows the opinion of the Ramah. And that's why we celebrate Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day. The minig is that you can definitely take a haircut in the morning of Lag BaOmer. Miksas Hayoim Kikuloi, that's the common opinion. And some are makel to take a haircut at night. Most are not. And that would be a nafkamina between 32 and 33, but most of us are not. There's a very big question, what we discussed yesterday at length. Why is it then that at night we're very lenient with regard to playing music? We play music, weddings and music. Why, when it comes to weddings and music, are we more lenient at night than we are by day? So if you're going to say it's because they really only died for 32 days, then we understand, because the Avelus is over at the very end of day 32, there's no issue whatsoever. That's a little bit of a stretch to say that, because it seems that we really followed the Ramah, that they died for only 32 days, and at night, why are we lenient? It's very hard to find a really satisfying reason. The basic reason given is that since Bizman Hazeh, the Avelus is just a Zecher, it's not a real Avelus. If it was a real Avelus, there's nothing to discuss. There's no heter to do anything at night until the morning begins. Miksas Hayoim Kikuloi is only done in the morning. It's not done at night. There will be absolutely no heter to lighten up the Avelus at night. But the truth is, it's not an Avelus. It's not a real Avelus. It's just a minog. It's a token minog to remember the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. So we do things that are similar to Avelus, but it's not a real Avelus. Thus, since day 33 is the last day that they died, the entire calendar day is a Yom Tov. since they stopped dying on this day, so it's not it's the calendar day. If it's the calendar day, so you can already technically shave, take haircuts, even at night. We don't want to go that far, but when there's room to be lenient, when we can already have weddings, and there can be music, and there can be celebration, especially and specifically when the celebration is for the purpose of a mitzvah. But if the celebration is for the purpose of a non-mitzvah, a person wants to go to a concert, Carnegie Hall, you want to go somewhere and it's not a mitzvah, it's just for enjoyment, not necessarily would a person be permitted the night of Lag BaOmer last night to do these things. Okay, but generally we follow the Ramah. Now, because we follow the Ramah on this matter, and even the Sfarad follow the Ramah on this matter, it's interesting, we all want to take note, is that today, Rav Meir always tells us all the yard sites, today is a big yard site. Are very big. It's so big, it's beyond big. And what is that? Whose yard site today is the yard site of the Ramah. And this is for sure. There's no fakers. We're not dealing over here. You have something called the yard site of one of the others. They'll tell you something before Matan Torah. They'll tell you what's today's yard site. You really wonder, could it really be that person's yard site? Do we really know for sure? Over so many thousands of years, these are based on very obscure midrashim. The Ramah died in the year, in the year 1572. So it wasn't all that long ago, just a few days ago. We were all back in Yeshiva Katana those days, right? We were all youngsters those days. So it wasn't all that long ago. So we know as an absolute fact that the yard site of the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, is today on Lag BaOmer. So I want to use this as an opportunity to do just to do briefly for a few minutes to discuss his life. When the Rambam died, they wrote on the Rambam's kever, Min Moshe v'yad Moshe loikom ki Moshe. It was known as great in Klal Yisrael from Moshe Rabbeinu until the Rambam, Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon, and Moshe v'yad Moshe loikom ki Moshe. The Rambam died in the year in the 1200s. In the 1200s. In the 1200s. 1204?
1204.
1204. Then when the Ramah died, they wrote on the next person we know of whom they wrote upon their kever these words, Mi Moshe v'yad Moshe lekom ki Moshe, was the Ramah. Rav Moshe Isserles in 15, what did you say, 70? What
is it?
15?
72.
72. They wrote on his kever, his name was Rav Moshe. Of Moshe, different opinions. How old was the Ramah? We'll get that. So I always grew up with being told that he was 33 years old, like Lag BaOmer.
Yeah.
That's brought down, such a thing. It appears to be impossible. It appears to be impossible that he was 33 years old and he died. Over here in this book of Yaakov David Shulman, it's a very nice collection of different stories and ideas, different concepts from Ramah. He says he was 48. I know that's not the only version. Some say he's 52.
Wikipedia said he was 42.
He writes that he was 47 or 48. I remember. I think 48 he says. 48. And Wikipedia says 42. And you just said it's 52? So. What? Yeah, you mentioned. Okay, there are different. Okay, it's not really important. One thing was for sure he died. He died on Lag BaOmer. I highly doubt it. How could they possibly know this is picture? I don't find anywhere in the book where they give this. I don't know, maybe it is. Maybe it is. Okay, but the Ramah, they wrote on his kever, Mi Moshe v'yad Moshe lekom ki Moshe, from the Rambam. From Moshe Rabbeinu, the feeling Klal Yisrael was that there was no one in the history of Klal Yisrael that was greater than the Rambam since the time the Ramah was an equal in his generation to what the Rambam was in his generation, from the Rambam until the Ramah Leikom Kemoshe. Who was the next person that got the Koshva title? The Chassam Sofer. His name was also Moshe when he died. And what year did he die, the Chassam Sofer? 18, who knows, something? The Chassam Sofer in the 1800s?
1826.
They wrote about the Chassam Sofer. Mi Moshe v'yad Moshe Leikom Kemoshe. From the Ramah. From Moshe Isserles. From Moshe Isserles to the Chassam Sofer, the Torah Moshe. Moshe used that his name was Svarm. He loikom ki Moshe, the Chassam Sofer. And the next person, they didn't write this. I do not believe it's on his kever, but the Olam says it. It's not on the kever. But it's Rav Moshe Feinstein. Now Rav Moshe Feinstein, Mi Moshe V'yad Mefin Chassam Sofer, such a manhig like none other in their generation until our generation, Mi Moshe V'yad Moshe Leikom K'moshe. It's a very interesting phenomenon of that. Klal Yisrael accept this. They look at Moshe Rabbeinu, the Rambam, the Ramah, the Chassam Sofer, and Rav Moshe Feinstein. I mean, it's interesting. It's a very interesting thing how we attribute such incredible greatness. So let me give you some highlights of the Ramah. The Ramah had a very rich life. His life experience is just phenomenal. Ramah, he started as a child prodigy. Okay, he did start out as a child prodigy. He's an incredible genius and an awesome Talmud Chacham. He comes from very chashuv yichus. Not in every little detail. His father was a very honest, ethical man, a Talmud Chacham in his own right. His mother was a tzaddikus, and in fact, when his mother died in a plague. They had in Krakow. They lived in Poland. Ramah grew up his entire life in Poland. He went between different cities in Poland, Lublin, and mainly most of his life, I think when he was already 20 years old, he became the chief rabbi of Krakow. Krakow, at that time, was the capital of Poland. What's the capital of Poland today?
Warsaw.
Warsaw, okay. But then it was Krakow.
Krakow was actually the capital of Galicia. Yes, that's an area of Poland.
That area of Poland. It was born in different parts. There were three parts of Poland. Arbarots, there were four parts. The Arbarots.
There were three parts of Poland.
Okay, it changed. A lot of things changed. You have to know the history. I don't know the history.
Poland wasn't that old a country. As a country, the land of what's called Poland wasn't so.
Okay, well, we call Poland, right? It's very complex. Lands, a lot of things changed over different smaller countries, larger countries, wars, hulu, whatever. But at that time, Poland, at that point in time, when he lived in the 16th century, the capital of Poland was Krakow. And there was a position. The rabbi died, I don't know who the rabbi was before, but the position was open, and he was only 20 years old. Would you believe? He just got married. He was married not that long ago, and he was recognized as being head and shoulders above everyone else, and he was promoted. His teachers, those who knew him, promoted. He indeed should be the chief rabbi of Krakow. And indeed, he took the position and he was accepted. 20 years old, and he remained in that position for the rest of his life. At that time, just to jump around different interesting, there are a lot of very interesting stories about the Ramah, which bring out his wit. His chachma, part of being successful as a rav, as a rabbi, is not just, you know, the chelke shulchan aruch, it's human psychology. I read recently one of the Paiskim, he was training Dayanim, and he told them, let me teach you something about Psak Halacha. Psak Halacha is 10% Shulchan Aruch, 90% psychology, human psychology. Someone comes to ask you a Shaila, you gotta know the person. You really need to have a PhD in psychology to be a Dayan. Because halacha, you can drei azoy and azoy, you can manipulate. There's no such thing as one halacha, one size fits all. Halacha can be molded to custom fit the person. Every situation is different. You have to understand who's asking the question. You have to understand the circumstances. You have to understand the consequences. You have to understand, you have to know yorid l'soif, oimkoy shel, the mind of a human being. You have to know. And you know, men are different. Men are different than women. You know, a man asks a question, that's one type of question. A woman asks a question. There was once a Gadol who said, I know Bavli, Yerushalmi, Sifros, Sifri. He lists a long, long laundry list of what he knows. He was bragging. I know Mamash Kotar Kula. But there's one thing I don't know. I don't know how the mind of a woman works. Okay, so to be a dayan, you have to know how the mind of a woman works, because halach is 10% halacha, 90% psychology, human psychology. The Ramah was the Poisek Hadar. He wrote the Hagois and the Shulchan Aruch. We'll discuss that. So let me just give you a story of wit, which really goes to show who the Ramah really was, at least to some degree. When the Ramah became the Roth of Krakow, there was a minhag in Krakow by the king. The king's name, he was a very famous king. He was a very good king of Poland. He had a lot of respect for the Ramah. And he lived a long time. I think the Ramah died a year after he died. Like, they lived at the same time. And there was also a bishop. Doesn't say anything about a cardinal, but there was a bishop. There was an archbishop who lived in Krakow. And the rule the king imposed upon Krakow, upon the entire region, was when a new rabbi was appointed by the Kehila, the archbishop must meet with him and grant approval. If the archbishop has veto power over the rabbi. In other words, the Kehila, it appears that in Poland at this time, the Jews had a lot of power, enormous amount of autonomy. The king gave the Jews, they had their own society, much, much more power than what Jews have today in America. In America, okay, we live in a Goyish country. We think we own the world, but we don't. We live at the good grace of the United States. You have the federal government, you have the state, you have the city. From Jews have very little power. You have no power, nothing. You have to rely upon the government. There are certain things that they do. If you have a bezdin, they'll acknowledge Batedinim to some degree. Okay, there is certain, but Jews, we have very little power. In Poland, they had a lot more power at this time. At this time, the Jews had really very, very, a lot of autonomy. And the chief rabbi had a lot of power. But the king said, I'm giving you all this power. You can select, you can elect a rabbi, provided the archbishop also gives his stamp of approval. And it went two ways. What?
No conflict.
He had veto power. The whole Klal Yisrael, I don't know how many Jews lived in Poland in this region. Let's say there would be, even, let's say, 50,000 Jews. They can all decide upon one rabbi, who they want their rabbi to be. And then the archbishop, he has veto power. I don't want him. He's not going to say he's out. He's out of the running. And it went both ways. When a new bishop was appointed, I guess the bishop like served as their rabbi. I don't know why he was a cardinal. Maybe was, I don't know why not a cardinal. But then when he was a bishop appointed, the rabbi, the chief rabbi, also had veto power, had to approve that this fellow can serve as the bishop. They were the two spiritual leaders. In those days, the goyim were very religious. They were all Christians, and they were religious. It was a very big issue. It wasn't just like today. Today, goyim, we don't see them perceive they're being religious. So the story is that when the Ramah was selected, he was only 20 years old. There's also a legend that his beard turned white overnight. Like, there's such a legend. There are a lot of like these very mystical legends. Are they true or not? Who knows? His beard turned white overnight, that people have respect for him, even though he was only 20 years old. And they told the archbishop that the rabbi is such a nice person, he's such a good person, you're going to love him. You're going to love him. And they brought him there to the archbishop. He met with him for a few moments, and then they left, and then they got a message that he's furious. He is furious. There's no way he will allow him to be appointed, because a 20-year-old kid? What, are you joking? How did you insult me? You insult my intelligence by telling me that this guy is brilliant, he's everything. They said about him, peace and Ramses. They said about him the world. That's what you do? And he was furious, and he wanted to go to the king and be malish and make a lot of trouble for the Jews. So the people there, they actually fasted for 3 days. The bishop was going to make such tzaras for the Jews. He had power also, such great tzaras for the Jews, that the people fasted for 3 days. They did not even tell the Ramah what was going on. The Ramah figured out something is wrong. He made an investigation. He found out what's going on, and he said, don't worry, let's have a meeting. Let's have a meeting, a debate. We'll talk in learning. We'll talk in learning. You'll see it. I'm not such a naive, ignorant person. So they told, the bishop agreed. So the bishop, he sent for the Ramah a horse and wagon. Now, in those days, you know, you can send an Uber or you could send a limousine. Okay, so the bishop, for the debate, which was going to be a public spectacle, he sent the cheapest car service, the cheapest type of wagon and horse to pick up the Ramah to bring the 20-year-old man who just got married not that long ago to come to, I guess, to the church, wherever, not going to a church, obviously, to wherever it was, for the debate, for the dialogue. So the Ramah's waiting, and for the car to come, and what comes? A Chevy. Comes an old, broken down wagon with an old horse and a driver. The Ramah says, I'm not going in this. It's not lefi kvoidi. That's not the way you treat a rabbi. You don't go send for the rabbi, the chief rabbi of the city. You don't go send. You don't send a shmata. That's a disgrace. And he rejected it. When he rejected it, and he sent back a mech chutzpah. That's what you sent for me? You sent for me a limousine. Derech kavod. So when the archbishop heard that, he said, aha, I see. He's taka. He's no tippish. The Ramah, indeed, he indeed is a very, is a, that already is a sign that you're right, that this fellow is something very special. He had the dignity to know when to, he had the presence of mind, he had the chachma to know when to be tovea his kavod. Very interesting. Okay, he died on the day. The reason why I'm saying that, so I love that story, is because that was the beginning of his rabbanus. That was the beginning of his ascent to becoming the Gadol Hadar in Klal Yisrael, and it was about kavod. And when did he die? He died on Lag BaOmer, on the day when we learned the lesson Sheloi Nohagu Kavod Ze Lo Ze. The first thing that he did as a Rav, his first Maisa as a Rav, was Kavod HaTorah. Kavod HaTorah, I'm the rabbi here. I'm the rabbi, you don't treat a rabbi like this by sending for me an old beat-up horse and wagon. Derech Eretz for the rabbi. Kavod HaTorah. He died on Lag BaOmer. The day when we learned what it means, Shenohagu Kavod Ze Lo Ze, as we discussed, it doesn't just not mean saying good morning. It means Kavod Ze Lo Ze means the Kavod HaTorah. He then had a debate with them, with the bishop, and the bishops, then he called in all the people, and he said to the people, you know, you were wrong. You were all wrong. You told me that he's a wise man. He's a brilliant man. You're all a bunch of liars. He is, what you told me about him is not even a mashahu of how great this person is, of how awesome and how wise and how clever he is. Okay, so that was how the Ramah's Rabbanus got off to a start. The Ramah, he had a yeshiva. This was a very big thing in those days. In order to be a real Talmud Chacham, it means you have a yeshiva. Today, when you get smicha, today when a student gets smicha, what does it mean you get smicha? It's something you add to your shidduch resume. That's really what it is today, right? You go to your smicha. Do you practice rabbanus? Almost never. But it's, you know, it means no, you're ben Torah. What?
No picture?
What?
On his resume, no picture.
On his resume, today when you get smicha, in those days, you know what it meant getting smicha? It didn't mean that you paskin. Okay, that's one thing. Getting smicha is what permitted you to open up your own yeshiva. It's a different world. Going back to the 16th century in Poland, you cannot open up a yeshiva unless you have smicha, and a legitimate smicha. And when they gave smicha, what does it mean to give smicha? It means this person is on a level where he is eligible to have his own yeshiva. And if you did not have that smicha, then you're illegitimate. You can't have a, yeah, that's what the smicha meant. That's an understatement. Smicha today means nothing. It means mamish nothing today. Today it's no, not even that. Okay, so smicha today, there are certain shuls, there are many shuls that will not even look at your resume unless it used to be a given. It used to be a given years ago, go back 20 years ago, 25 years ago. If you apply for a rabbinic position and you don't have smicha from a recognized authority, from an institution, Yeshiva University, from Torah V'Das, from Eretz Yisrael, from the Rabbanut, from somewhere that is recognized on the map, they won't even look at your resume. Today, you'd be shocked. It's not so. Today, it's even in shuls, established shuls that want a real Rav, yeah, we want smicha, and usually it's not a problem, but sometimes they discover, you know, that this candidate, he doesn't have smicha. You'll be shocked to learn that they'll say, it's okay, we don't need the smicha. Anyway, what, you're going to paskin for a shayla? Yeah, certain things you can paskin, that's okay. The big shayla is, anyway, you're not going to paskin. And as long as you have the things that we need to service this community, And sometimes they'll take the rabbi and they'll say, you know, in the process, you know, learn for smicha. Over the next 5 years, the tanai of being of taking the position of being the rabbi, we want you should get smicha. So over the next 5 years, slowly go find a rav. You should give you smicha. You should learn the halachas, pasul v'chav yerdeya, hilchas nid, hilchas shabbos, and you should give you smicha so it should look good for us. So on our letterhead, we should have a rabbi who has smicha. But in those days, smicha meant didn't mean to have a yeshiva. And that's where he devoted the bulk of his time. He had talmidim. And this is something which comes out in this book very nicely, and it's a very fascinating concept, is that the Rama had talmidim. Now, what does it mean, talmidim? I can't give you chapter and source in the Dibba. No, I go into a kollel, and there's the Rosh kollel there. I tell you about him all the time. It was Rav Simcha Soloveitchik. And he is always talking and talking about all different things, about brisk. I always eavesdrop on his conversations. And he talks about the Brisker family, and he always compares one. He talks about this, the Brisker Rav, and this one, Ravelvel, and this one. Now, and he goes, all the Yichus. I heard him once say this. He says, what was the difference between this fellow and this fellow? This Gadol, this one. And he said, I don't know who he was referring to, but he was talking about the different Rabbanim and Brisk. This Gadol, all of his Talmidim were the same. They were clones of himself and clones of each other. He was a brilliant, brilliant Talmud Chacham. He worked on his Talmidim, and they all came out the same. That's what he wanted. He produced many Talmidim, and they're all the Derech, the same Derech. A, B, C, D. They have the same approach to learning, the same Hashkafa. But the other one, look at his Talmidim. They're so different. This Talmud excelled in this area. And this Talmud's specialty was this area. He had a different talent. He was able to take the natural qualities that each individual had and develop them and make them great in what they were meant to be. That idea was just percolating in my mind for a very, very long time. When I read this book from Rabbi David Shulman, he has a couple of chapters on his Talmidim, and it's very, very fascinating. That's really the Ramah. The Ramah produced the next generation of Gedolei Yisrael. Almost all the people you see on the Shulchan, on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, were all this Talmidim. Almost all the big names in the world of Halacha were all his Talmidim. Why was he called Mimoyesha V'yad Moyesha Loikam K'moyesha? It's very appropriate for Lag Ba'omer. I'm going to explain this in a moment, because he produced Talmidim. And his koyach was, each one of his Talmidim was different. Each Talmud was able to develop and to focus on his unique specialty, which is an incredible, incredible talent of a gadol to do that. To find the choymer of each individual, nurture and develop it, and make that person in what that person should be. Don't make him like me. And don't make him like the other guy. And don't make him like the competition. I'm going to make you what you could be. It takes a Rebbe to do that. The Ramah did that. And I really feel that's why the Ramah, besides the fact that he in Shulchan Aruch is, you know, the Hagah, the Ramah writes, V'nohagu, Yeshnei Hagim, and he tells you what the Ashkenazic halacha is, that's a very critical element in why it says on his kever, Mi Moshe v'ad Moshe leikam ki Moshe. He is part of the Messiah. He had the ability to create a new generation of Talmidim who on their own right went out and changed Klal Yisrael. That's a very special madrega. And I'm going to go just off the topic a little bit. We'll take a break in the middle. I think we'll talk about this all the time. Is that, let me, this is a very important point about Lag Ba'omer. It's a very beautiful idea about Pirkei Avos and Lag Ba'omer. Why is the death, why did the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, why did they die? Why did they die? Shiloi nohagu kavod zeh lazeh. So what? That's not one of the gimel averus chamurais. So they didn't have good midos. Certainly their midos were no worse than our midos. We're dealing over here, daka shebedaka. Okay, a teeny little teeny. They died? Come on. They died because they didn't say good morning to. They didn't say with an excitement, good morning. They didn't stand up when the person walked into the room. I didn't appreciate your kavod, the kavod atorah. They deserve death? All 24,000? So, who gives this answer? Maybe it's the Maral. I think it's the Maral. I think it's based upon the Maral, if I'm not mistaken. He says, you don't understand. When Rabbi Akiva was training 24,000 Talmidim, He wasn't just teaching, giving a shiur. No, Talmidim, you're going to come to my shiur, and after you graduate, you go out to the workforce. You'll be in Koilel for a couple of years, and after Koilel, you get a job, you go to college, you get a job, you become a doctor, a lawyer, you'll become this, that, you'll go out, you'll find your place in this world. That was not Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was producing, he was producing Talmidim who would be a link in the chain of the Messiah. The transition. Moshe kibel Torah misinai. Umosra liYehoshua. UYeshua liZakenim. UZakenim liNeviim. UNeviim liAnshei Knesset HaGedola. There is a Messiah in Klal Yisrael. Now we find today, unfortunately, it's a very sad thing, there are Talmidei Chachamim that are outstanding. They produce Sfarim that are second to none. They're super duper brilliant. They're poiskim, but not all of them are known to have the best midos. It's a fact. They don't all have a good bedside manner. They don't. That's a reality. They're not all. Not everyone is such a baal derech eretz. Not everyone is so respectful to the other rabbanim, their colleagues. It's a reality. It's a reality. So is it a terrible thing? Yes, it is. You know, it's a chilat. But it's, the world doesn't come to an end because they're necessary. These are people who do for Klal Yisrael enormous service. So everyone has imperfections. No one is perfect. It's a very rough world. You get roughed up, and people react in ways that they never thought they would do, and you can't judge anyone.
Is it part of the Star of Midos?
So it's not so terrible. Why is it not so terrible? Because these people, they're not part of the Messiah. There is no Messiah anymore. We're done. They're not going to be the people who are transmitting the Torah to the next generation. Pretty much, the Torah has been transmitted. We're just heading towards Mashiach now. We've reached the range of the Mashiach. To be a Talmud Chacham and not have good midos is a big, big problem. But the world doesn't come to an end. But when you have a school that is designated for students who will be the next link in the Messiah, then if the midos are no good, you're out of the game. There are two different types of yeshivas. There's a yeshiva, people should just sit and learn. They should be telling me they have the tools of life. They should be telling me chachamim. They should know the halacha. They have good families and go get a job and make a parnasa and not become a burden on the community. And then there's a yeshiva where you're producing talmidim. For the goal is from these talmidim, there should come out students who will be the next link in transmitting the Torah to the next generation. Does such a thing exist today? I don't think so. Maybe in the big picture of things it does, but on a smaller level, obviously not. There's no such thing like that anymore. When Rabbi Akiva was alive, it did exist. And Rabbi Akiva was entrusted by his colleagues from the people of the previous generation. You, Rabbi Akiva, you now have to be the one. We're giving you a mission. The Gedolei Yisrael said to Rabbi Akiva, the previous generation, you know, you start as a youngster. He's a Baal Tshuva, Rabbi Akiva. He was an ignoramus till he was 40. He didn't know the Aleph Beis. He was 40 years old, and he shot up. He became the Gadol Hadar. And the Gedolei Yisrael said, you know, we're passing on, and we're giving you the trend. We're giving over the Mesorah to you, and you have a major task on your hands. You have an obligation to give over the Mesorah to the next generation. And you better go and put together a team of Talmidei Chachamim who will in turn give it over to the next generation. And those were his 24,000 Talmidim. Not everyone would necessarily be the link, but hopefully in this yeshiva, it takes a lot of people to produce one good man. For every 1,000 people that go into the Beis Medrash, only one comes out, the Moira Hora. But it wasn't just the Moira Hora. It wasn't like today you can have a Moira Hora, you can go to a Dayan and he'll tell you, be very confident today, you'll go to a Dayan and he'll tell you what the correct halacha is in a very, very complex situation. And then we'll say, you want to marry his daughter? I don't think so. I cannot live with him being my shver. No way. I cannot live with him. He's just obnoxious. He cannot be my father-in-law. No way. But you're comfortable enough to go to him to paskin a $1 million shiloh. That's right. That's right. He knows the halacha. He spent his whole life learning. He's an expert in this matter. There's no one in this generation that's a bigger expert in knowing the halachas like him. But you know, his midos, they're okay. He's not, didn't run an avera. He's a nice guy. He's good enough. But to be a son-in-law by him? Not for me. I'm sorry. So, oh, you'll tell me it's a chil Hashem. You'll tell me, oh, but the Talmid Rabbi Kiva, they died. How could you be a Talmud Chacham? As long as you know there are different madregos and how far. But to be a link in giving over the Torah to the next generation, the midos have to be spectacular.
So Rabbi Akiva failed in that sense?
So in training, yeah, he did. He did fail in that sense. His first 24,000, he failed. The second five, he succeeded. So the first 24,000 Talmidim that he, there was something wrong. And he failed. They did not have...
How come he lived? He should have been punished too.
That's what we discussed. A very tough question. It's a very difficult question. Why don't we find that he was held accountable for their failure? He was the Rebbe. He should have taught them better. I don't know the answer. I didn't see anyone talk about that answer. It's a very tough question. But he failed. And what the failure is probably something that we would never pick up on. They were probably the nicest people in the world, the 24,000 Talmidim. But being that they were the next link of the Messiah, the Hashem demands perfection. Perfection beyond perfection, which we would never pick up on. Because it's not just Stam Talmud Chacham. That's a very important concept. It's the next link of Messiah. That's why Lag BaOmer is such a critical holiday. Lag BaOmer is where there was a very great danger. The danger of Lag BaOmer is we could have come to an end. There's a lot of connections, similarity between Purim and Lag BaOmer. Lag Purim, we could have come to an end. A miracle, we survived. Lag BaOmer, the spiritual continuity of Klal Yisrael was in very great danger. And the proof is, Hashem cut off the 24,000 Talmidim who were designated as being the next link because they did not have the proper Midos Toivos. And what did Rabbi Akiva do on Lag BaOmer? He said, I got the message, Ribbono Shel Olam. I got it. Let's start again. And this time I'm not going to make a mistake. I'm going to start with five Talmidim. The Yerushalmi, the Medrash says seven Talmidim. This Machlokes is 5 or 7. We're going to start all over again. And this time I'm not going to make a mistake. I'm going to produce Talmidim that are going to be the Midos Toivos in addition to being the Talmidei Chacham, because since these are going to be the ones that are going to give over the Messiah to the next generation, their Midos have to be spectacular. Look at Rashbi. He was the link in the Messiah, Rashbi. And what happened when they came out of the cave? They saw a guy working, and what did he do? Shaita, he said to him. Shaita, right? What kind of midos is this? You look at the guy, he's working, he says, go back to Kailal. What are you doing? So what did Hashem say to Rashbi? Get back in the cave. You're not yet ready. And then when he came out of the cave a year later, he got it. And he said to him, oh, he embraced him. It was a whole different Rashbi. The midos were very, very different. Because he was linking the Messiah and he saw things different from that perspective. Yeah.
Wasn't Slobodka like that? I think he
the Alter of Slobodka viewed himself as being the link, yes. And he produced. Each Talmud was unique. Each Talmud was very, very different. It's a very big talent to make each Talmud different. The Ramah, going back to the 16th century, from this book at least, in my way, I interpret what he writes here, Mamish had that koyach. He had Talmidim. This was his role, a Rebbe. He was the Rav of Krakow. He's really known, the Ramah is known to be the Rav of Krakow. The Ramah is known to be the Poisek for Ashkenazim. V'nei Yisrael Yoitzim B'yod Ramah. Right? He went and he wrote his Sefer in contrast, the Rav Yosef Kairo wrote the Shulchan Aruch, and the critique, we'll get that with the critique, let's discuss that now. The Rav Yosef Kairo, he, at this time, they were both working on a Sefer at the same time. Rav Yosef Kairo, you have to take a step back. There was, what was the Sefer of the day? The Torah. The Torah was, that's where all the action was. Everything revolved around the Torah. The Torah was written in which century? The 13th century is written, I think, 300 years before. What? The 14th century, turn of the Rosh. I think
the late 1300s.
1400s. So we're dealing over here almost 200 years. Almost 200 years before the Beis Yosef comes on the scene. It was a hashkacha. There were three people working on a work at the same time who did not know from each other. The Levush. Well, the Levush is later. Maybe I make a mistake. The Ramah, who is the Ramah? I don't remember. The Ramah and the Rav Yosef Cairo at the same time working on a Sefer. Rav Yosef Cairo, was writing the Beis Yosef. He lived in Eretz Yisrael and was writing the Beis Yosef. At the same time, the Ramah felt that there's a need to elaborate upon the Torah. So he wrote the Sefer called Darkei Moshe. The Maggid, the Beis Yosef, is learning with the Malach every night. A Malach every night came to learn with the Beis Yosef in Tzfas. Okay, all the Mukbalim are there in Tzfas. It's interesting that Lag BaOmer, it's interesting how the two come together. Ramah comes together with all the mystics in Tzfas. And in Tzfas, the Maggid, the Malach, would learn Torah with the Beis Yosef. They told him, you better hurry up and finish the Beis Yosef, because if you don't hurry up, there's someone that's going to beat you to it. There's someone, who's that other person? The Ramah. He was working at the same time on the Darkei Moshe. It's called Darkei Moshe. We have it. And then what happened? The Rav Yosef Cairo, he beat the Ramah. He finished the Beis Yosef. He published it. And somehow it made its way from Eretz Yisrael all the way to Krakow. And someone presented the Beis Yosef to the Ramah. The Ramah almost fainted. He went into a deep depression for 3 days. That's what it says here. Because he spent years and he denied himself sleep. He tortured himself to produce his work, the Darkei Moshe, and he sees in front of him a published Sefer that did everything that he wanted to do. So he felt like his whole life work was a waste. And he had incredible Chalishas Hadas and went into a depression, it says. He was a human being. The Ramah wasn't a Malach Elohim, he was a human being who felt very pained that someone beat him to it. And the Malach told the Maggid told him, beat him to it. And then after 3 days, he looked it over again and he said, you know something? My Sefer serves a purpose. Because the Beis Yosef was only citing from the Sfardim, only the Spanish Jews. He was taking the Shita, that's a little later on, but his focus was on the Poiskim, the Gedolim from Sephorad, from Spain. And the Ramah in his work included two things. Number one, the Ramah included the Rishonim from Ashkenaz, Germany and France. And here's the very, very important big difference, which people don't talk about. The Ramah included modern-day Poiskim. He took that into account. In other words, it's like the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah, when the Chofetz Chaim wrote the Mishnah Berurah, he did not discuss the controversial issues of the day that were decided by modern-day Poiskim. He steered clear of controversy. He only focused on the Kadmoinim, on the Poiskim of the earlier generation. The Poiskim of the current generation, the Chofetz Chaim did not want to get involved with. He didn't want to talk about Machine Matzah. He didn't want to talk about a lot of controversial issues. So Rav Yosef Cairo, in that respect, who was hundreds of years before Chofetz Chaim, he was like the Mishnah Berurah. And he said, I'm not getting involved. I'm only going to work with the Rishonim. The Ramah differed in his work with Rav Yosef Cairo. Not only did he bring in all of the Ashkenazim from Germany and France, he also cited and worked with the Chidushim on his generation, of the modern day Poiskim of his generation. He incorporated their Chidushim and their works, their ideas, into his work. So he felt relieved that his work was not for nothing. It also serves a very important purpose called the Darkei Moshe. At that point in time, what was there? There were two books. There was the Torah, which was all, that was the big game. And then the Torah needed some elaboration. So we have the Beis Yosef, which is a massive, massive Sefer. Okay, the Beis Yosef itself is just itself. Today it's only published in the Shulchan Aruch, which are only published in the Torah. So you have the Torah, you have also other Mefarshim on the Torah. So you don't have, there's no thing today as a Beis Yosef alone. The Beis Yosef is part of the Torah today. You have the Torah in the middle. On the side is the Beis Yosef. And then you have a lot of stuff on the bottom. If you would just extract the Beis Yosef, so you would have a couple of volumes. You have two, three volumes. It will be short. And you have the Darkei Moshe. So those are the two competing Svarim. The Darkei Moshe and the Beis Yosef. Then what happened later? Then the Beis Yosef went further. He decided, let me summarize all of my Piskei Halacha and let me write the bottom line, a digest. And the bottom line is, we're going to take the majority of the three Piskim, the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. And whatever the majority of these three, there are three major Rishayim that we're going to work with, the bottom line, whoever is the majority, that's going to be the Psak Halacha. And he wrote the bottom line in this new thing called the Shulchan Aruch. Talmud one day shows up and shows the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch, and he looks at it, and he says, it's very nice, but he's only focusing on three Rishonim, the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. Two of those three are Sfardim. One is the Rambam and the Rif are the Sfardim, and the Rosh was from Ashkenaz.
So but he also later went to Sfard.
But at least his Messiah was from Ashkenaz. So therefore, the Ramah says, Zelofer. You can't go and follow the Pesach and the majority when it's fixed, when it's two against one. So he wrote, let me write Hagoyis. First, I think he wanted to write it as his own Sefer. I don't remember what he did. He wrote the Hagoyis on the Shulchan Aruch. This Tak is according to the Sfardim. But here in Poland, were all immigrants. Poland, everyone in Poland was an immigrant from Ashkenaz, pretty much, from Germany and France. That in the 17th century, in the 16th century, where did they come from? Well, they came out of the ground. How did they get to Poland? How did they get to Poland? They got to Poland from Germany, from the Rishonim. Where were the Rishonim? Rashi under Balei Tosfos. Where were they? They lived in France and Germany. France, Germany, and Spain. That's where Klal Yisrael was primarily located during the 10th and 11th century. That's where all the Torah came from, the Rishonim. So what he's doing, what now in Sfas, the Beis Yosef is coming, is passing like the Sephardic Jews from Spain. It's not fair. What about the Balei Tosfos? What about the Rishonim who live in France and Germany? So we here are living in Poland, the majority of the community in Poland were actually people who emigrated from France and Germany and have developed here. Let me write now Hagoyis, what is our tradition, which primarily comes from France and Germany. Not only that, let me also incorporate into the works of my Hagoyis what the people of Poland themselves were machadish. Built into the Ramah, people don't know this. It's not just things that you're going to find in the Rishonim, or Chidushim you're going to find from the Gedolei Yisrael who lived and were born and bred in Poland. And not only that, his own Chidushim. So the Ramah, the Hagoyis of the Ramah incorporate really four different concepts. It incorporates the Mesorah from the Balei Ashkenaz, France and Germany, the Chidushim from the modern day Poskim of his generation, who were born and bred for the last 200-300 years, who know from nothing but Poland, and they would tell me they come in their own right, which Rav Yosef Karo didn't want to touch. He didn't touch modern. That was a very big difference between the Ramah and the Rav Yosef Karo. The Ramah would be considered today modern. I'll show you other examples. The Ramah was modern. We would call him modern Orthodox. I don't know if you can call the Ramah modern Orthodox, but you wouldn't call him on the extreme, an extreme Haredi. There's no question about it. He was, at the time, he was considered to be cutting edge, like what we would call modern, had different ideas, and I'll give you other examples. But he brought into the Hagoyis Ashkenaz, he brought in Chidushim from people who were born and bred in Poland. He gave respect to the modern day Gedolim of his time, and he also aired his own Chidushim. The Beis Yosef doesn't need his own Chidushim. I think the Beis Yosef is much more respectful. He's not coming to give his own Chidushim. The Beis Yosef is coming to, it's called a Chiddush. But it's all been drawn from the Rosh, the Rif, and his interpretation. There's a certain, I'm not going to go and in my own Chidushim. to a degree. That's not 100% accurate, of course, but the Ramah was much, much more, felt much more empowered to mold halacha as he wished. And that's something very novel. And what did he call his hagoyis? The mappa. If that's called a shulchan aruch, the shulchan aruch needs a tablecloth. Right? It used to be years ago, you check someone for shidduchim. It's unheard of for a Jew to have a table in their home without a tablecloth, right? You told me that?
Yes.
Today it's unheard of that you should have a tablecloth. But it used to be, you can't have a beer table. You have to have a tablecloth. Table, a shulchan aruch needs a mappa. He called it a mappa. That word did not have mazel. So somehow, no one calls it the mappa. No one even knows what the mappa is. Everyone calls it one of two things. They call it either the Ramah, or they call it the Hagois. The Hagois, because Hagah. And he wrote his Hagois. He was controversial in his day. There were a few very controversial Piskei Halacha. One of them was, there was a big fight between Yosem, and they didn't want to get married because they didn't get enough money. It was all about money. And they got married in those days on Friday. And the fight went on, and there was a machlokes of dowry. How much money the chasan kal is going to get. And they started fighting, so there was a delay. And the wedding, the fight went into Shabbos. So he didn't daven. And everyone was, he didn't come to daven. He was just negotiating with the two parties Friday night. And just sitting there in the beds in the garden. They finally came to an agreement. And he went and he made the wedding on Shabbos Friday night. Shaloi kedim. You're not supposed to get married on Shabbos. It says Shulchan Aruch. Kobi says Shulchan Aruch. You don't make kinyonim on Shabbos. But he did it. Because he felt, if not now, it's never going to happen. This created a major controversy. How could the Rav of Krakow, it's like a conservative rabbi. I'm not joking. It was viewed to be mamish, a breach of halacha, to make a wedding Friday night, to make a kedushin Friday night, and the tshuvis were flying across the world. And his legitimacy was questioned, was challenged, you know, because he did such a controversial. At the end of the day, he won. At the end of the day, he felt the halacha demanded that this be done. Another very big controversy was there was a person who was shmat. There was a lot of shmat going on. People that went off the derech. They converted to Christianity. And there was and these people were obviously there were very big problems. They converted to Christianity. They were persuaded by the goyim. They were threatened, this, that, all different types of stories. And a child came to him and said, "What should they call me up for an aliyah? My father's name is Yankel, and everyone knows my father converted to Christianity." So the thinking at the time was, when this happened, which happened quite often, if a father converts to Christianity, then you don't call the child by the father's name in shul for an aliyah, you call him up by the grandfather's name. That's what they did. So he paskin in a very famous case, you call up the child by his father's name. Even though the father indeed converted, in this particular case, that was also very controversial. He was involved in a lot of controversial piskei halacha. He also quoted from Aristotle. And he quoted this, I think, to the Marsham. And the Marsham was like the other extreme, like what we say. And he writes, "I can't believe what I saw with my eyes. You quoted in your truth from a secular source. You open, you know. How do you even know these things? Philosophy, what in the world is going on?" And he wrote back with such a tkifus, "You have to know chokhmah. Chokhmah sa'amim. You have to know." I told you, you would say today he was modern. They compare. That's why they say about him, "Mimoshe v'yad Moshe lekom kemosh," because the Rambam, that was the Rambam. The Rambam was Mor Devuchim. The Rambam, he promoted the study of philosophy for those who needed it. Philosophy and having understanding of Chochmah of the entire world. That's why they burnt the Rambam's books. The Rambam's Mor Devuchim was burnt. The Rambam's Sefer Hamada was burnt because the Rambam was such a person who promoted Chochmah Chitzonis. The Ramah goes so far to say an incredible Chiddush. You know what he says? He wrote a Sefer called Toras Oila. In that Sefer, it's really on Halacha, but he has a lot of Agada, and he says something shocking. He says, "What did Klal Yisrael do?" He doesn't say in these words. I don't want to bring out the shock. It's not as shocking. It's not as powerful the way we are. What did Klal Yisrael do for the first 49 days until they received the Torah? Hashem took them out of Egypt and they counted Sfira. There's no Torah. So they don't have a Daf Gemara. So what did they learn for 49 days? they learned Chochma Chitzainis. For 49 days, everyone in Klal Yisrael went to university. Until Matan Torah, there's no Daf Gemara.
What about Mara?
They learned a few, but not that was they didn't hold all day. They went to university to learn Chochma. You need Derech Eretz Kodmo LaTorah. What's Derech Eretz? Derech Eretz means the Chochma of the way the world works, the sciences. Derech Eretz. How does the world work? Tell me. Explain me the laws of physics. Explain to me the laws of all the sciences. I have mathematics. I have to know Chochma. I have to know Derech Eretz Kodmo LaTorah. For 49 days, Klal Yisrael spend their time learning Chochma Chitzainis. Where are you going to hear such a pshat? Today, if someone would say that pshat today, they would be banned. They would mamish be banned. But he said it. He said it, I'm just reading here from this one little book over here. What do I know? I know from nothing. But he did a lot. This fellow, he did a lot of research.
So how can you be a posek without knowing general knowledge?
Well, you can't. That's what he said. You can't. That's what he wrote back. He wrote back to the Marsham. What are you talking about? It's just that shaykh. You have to know. You have to know chokhmah. Like I told you, to be a dayan, you have 10% halacha, 90% psychology. It comes to other halachas. It's 10% halacha. It's 90% science. Someone asks you a modern day shayla, a grummer switch. Are you allowed to turn on in Shabbos? Well, if you don't understand anything about electricity, you don't understand anything about engineering, electrical engineering, then you don't have a chance to go to Paskin Halacha. You have to know everything, then you can incorporate. So he felt very strongly about this, and that was one of his incredible talents. And the talent was, he at the end of the day, he was respected, not just respected, he was idolized. He wasn't just respected, the world had for him enormous respect. And it's amazing how he was able to do that, knowing the type of approach he had, which in today's society does not exist. Anyone today that is just a little modern, automatically is mechutz l'machaneh. Because why? Not because they're mechutz l'machaneh. It's because it's marketing. It's because we don't know, because they don't have the ability, or we don't have the ability to appreciate that they're not mechutz l'machaneh. They're the real deal. Adrabba, they're on top of everyone else. They're even more broad. They have even more yiras shemaim. Maybe the society is different. We don't have where it's even possible, something like that. But at the time, he was definitely cutting edge. And he was a tremendous pikeach. The one thing, I remember once someone told me about a certain menahel. What's his koyach? His koyach is, he's a very wise person. Forget about Torah. Forget about Yerushalayim. You need Torah. You need Yerushalayim. And you need to be brilliant. But you also have to be clever. Clever! It's a talent which a lot of people don't have. They just don't get it. They don't get the way the world, the nastiness of the world, and how to be clever. He was clever. For example, there was a fellow who came to him. Someone lent someone a lot of money. And the guy was a tippish. He thought, you don't need to have a contract, a shtar. You can lend someone money. You can trust someone. Right? You can trust someone with your money. He comes back for the money and the guy says, Lahadam, loy hayadvarim li'olam. So the fellow runs to the Ramah. And Ramah, the guy is a gun if he stole my money. And I come back and he says, Lahadam, did you write a shtar? No. Tippish, why didn't you write a shtar? Let me talk to the guy. Talks to the guy. He smells him out. Like the Melech HaMashiach can judge by smelling. He sees the guy's a ganav. But what could he do? Your hands are tied. So he says to him on the spot, you know, beautiful watch. I never saw such a beautiful. Can I just look at it? I love this watch. Right? I just look at it. The new iWatch. You have the latest version of the iWatch. I want to see how it interconnects with WhatsApp and with Messenger. I want to connect. Oh, no, my wife is a real techie. Maybe I can just show this to my wife for a few minutes. My wife would love this iWatch. She's real, real techie, my wife. So the guy says, all right, you can show it to your wife for a few minutes. Okay, let me. So he takes the watch. He could care less about the watch. He takes the watch. He says to the Shamus, go to this Russia's wife and take this watch and say to him, And the Shamus says to the Shamus, tell the wife that your husband sent me as a shliach to retrieve the purse which has this guy's money, this guy's $1 million, and as a simon that it's for real, look, I'm sending you my watch. I'm sending you my watch so you know that this guy is not as nice guy, that the shliach, the messenger, is not making up a bubba maisa. You know you can be certain that the messenger is authentic because the messenger has in his hand my watch. How else would he get it? So the fact that he's holding my watch in his hand is a simon that it's that I want, that he's for real, and I want you to give the purse that has this fellow's money to the messenger and bring it to me right, and let him take it back to me right away. The guy never said this. The Rambam made this whole story up. Instantly on the spot. He borrowed the guy's watch. He asked the guy, showed the watch to my wife. He didn't send it to his wife. He sent it to that guy's wife with this messenger, telling the messenger to give over the money. The wife should give the money to the fellow on the simon is the watch. 5 minutes later, the messenger comes back with all the money. He then goes into the room and he says to the guy, oh, here's the money. What do you mean you never lent him the money? Here's the money. And the guy's eyes pop out. How'd you get the money? Your wife gave it to us. And the guy couldn't believe it. And Akachi admitted on the spot that he's a ganav. That takes pikchus. You see that's you don't have that type of cleverness amongst the average Gedolei Yisrael. You don't have it. You go to a diet, you go to the Gadol Hadar, you got a problem. He's so quick on his toes to know how to find a solution to uncover the sheker when the guy is all lawyered up. Right? The guy is all lawyered up. And he has all the answers, and you're able to outsmart him on the spot. That's a pikchus. That was the Ramah. The Ramah combined, the talents that he combined are just not to be believed. He was a Talmud Chacham, second to none. He was cutting edge in his approach to understanding the world. He was worldly, modern, worldly, in understanding how the world works. Number two, he was the guardian of the Mesorah of the Ashkenazim. Just like they've been praising, tremendous praise for Rav Avadah Yosef, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. What was his godless Rav Avadah Yosef? He was Machzir HaTorah LeYoshna. The Sfardim were in the mud. And I said, the Sfardim, their halacha, they were not respected. The Rav Avadah Yosef, he was Machzir HaTorah LeYoshna, the Psak halacha of the Sfardim. He brought back in Eretz Yisrael, he brought back the dignity to the Sfardim. Tremendous, incredible respect and halachic dignity to halacha for the Torah of the Sfarad, like none other. The world will be completely different today in Eretz Yisrael if not for Avadah Yosef. They don't even give him half the credit that he deserves. The Ramah did exactly the same thing that we can relate to. If you read the biography of Avadah Yosef and appreciate what he did for the Sfaradim, it's mind-boggling. The Ramah did the same thing for the Ashkenazim. What Rav Avadah Yosef did for the Sfaradim, even more so. Because the Ashkenazim were in the danger of becoming extinct because of what Rav Yosef Cairo did. Rav Yosef Cairo put on a pedestal the Sfaradim. The Rambam and the Rif, Vizehu. 95% of Shulchan Aruch is the majority of the Rambam and the Rif, and that's it, the Ashkenazim were out in the street. And all the people in Poland, oh, what's going on? They had no respect. The Ramah said, no, we have a Mesorah also. So he was a Talmud Chacham, second to none. The Gadol Hador, no one, he can pass on anything. He preserved the legacy of the Ashkenazim. He had a pikchus that is so much lacking in our generation among leaders. When you have leadership, it's not just halacha, it's pikchus. It's of cleverness to know how to lead and guide. He had that tremendous koyach. And he had the incredible talent to produce Talmidim, not just clones. You go to Brisk, you're a Brisk. Everyone is the same exact thing, right? Everyone is the Brisk. Someone said that if you take a broomstick and you put on the broomstick a hat and a jacket, that's a yeshiva bacher. That's what a yeshiva bacher is. A broomstick with a hat and a jacket. Where's the person? Where's the person? The unique individuality of the person. The Ramah did that. Talmidim. That was his koyach. All of the commentators on the Shulchan Aruch, every last one of them was his talmud. He produced the Mesorah. He preserved the legacy. He gave over the Mesorah to the next generation. He was an awesome person. And it's not for nothing they say, Mi Moshe, the Ad Moshe, come to Moshe. And another very awesome character trait that he led, He suffered enormous tragedy in his life. His wife died in a plague. His mother died. His grandmother died. There were terrible plagues, terrible setbacks in his life. And as an example, he just persevered. He led by showing you have problems in life. You go weiter. You put it behind you no matter what. Now, what he went through, the loss of his wife, the loss of his children, also had trouble with his children, also the health issues. What he went through, and yet by example, you go weiter. People looked up to him for that alone, dealing with difficulties. The qualities that he had, each one of them, you find a person like this, maybe one in a century, for one quality. A person that can combine all these qualities into one person, it's unreal. It's mamish unreal. And the legacy of halacha today, ad hayom hazeh, every halacha that we follow today is all the Ramah. Uvinei Yisro Yitzin B'yod Ramah. And when was he nifter? Today. Today, lag ba'omer, zichusoy yogein aleinu. When he died, the hesped, they gave a hesped, they said 33, it was lag ba'omer. So it was a big thing in those days. The hesped was a big thing. They gave 30, the master wanted to say 33 shvachim. That was the hesped. The Ramah died today, it's lag ba'omer. We're going to give over 33 attributes of praise for the Ramah. And the maspid, when he spoke, only had 32. And they were missing 33rd. And like he was embarrassed, you need 33 shvachim. And then they remembered there's a 33rd shevach. And the 33rd shevach was that on Purim at night, he got dressed up in a costume. No one knew who he was during the Suda, when it was already late, and went banging on door to door to remind everyone in Krakow, Myriv, don't forget Myriv. It wasn't beneath his dignity to go and remind everyone he got dressed up in the costume. And that was the 33rd Shevach they gave for him on Lag B'Omer for his Ptira, and my interpretation of that is that the last thing they said about him, he, no matter how great he was, he was in disguise. He was in a costume. He was a lot greater than we can ever imagine. The last shevach they gave of him is, he was in a costume. And he was knocking on the door. It's time to daven Myriv. It's Golos. It's dark at night. It's dark, we're in Golos. But you have to say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. You have to have a moon in the Geula Shlema, even the dark times of Golos. That was the last shevach they gave about Ramah. Zuchusoy Yogein Oleinu. Have a wonderful day.